The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with my friend Tom Fairbanks, on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing the show. Together, we welcome you to the Buckmaster Show. It's the midweek edition, Wednesday, March 4th, 2020, broadcasting from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. We're on 1030 Tucson's Voice for trusted news talk, worldwide live listening, always available for you. On my website, buckmastershow.com, it's also the place we have all of our podcasts available for you 24/7. Live line number 790-2040. Our monthly chat now with Ward 6, Tucson City Councilman, Democrat, Steve Kasachek. Steve, how are you?
Well, I'm doing okay, but I think your intro needs to change. I think you and your sponsors should adopt all of my views.
Oh.
Instead of the disclaimer.
Oh, instead, just adopt what I'm talking about. There you go. I want to begin with the coronavirus. Was it brought up at the council meeting? Cities across the West Coast mainly, are trying to get ahead of it with declarations of emergency. I guess that's in many cases just to kind of bring awareness to people, but I think pretty much everybody's heard right now about it. What was the thinking at the meeting?
Well, there are a few things going on. First of all, and I'll circle around to the meeting. Francisco Garcia, County Health Administrator, has already put out some protocols. He didn't declare an emergency, but he put out the kinds of protocols that people should follow in their workplaces. On campus, the university has done the same thing, put out protocols. I have invited Dr. Garcia to come to the Ward Community Room, Ward 6 Community Room, 5:30 on the 11th, a week from today. And the reason for that is because I am in contact pretty regularly with lots of the shelters and, you know, the work at the Benedictine and the Casa Alita shelter right now. But in addition to that, shelters such as Sister Jose's and some of the Primavera kinds of shelters and Gospel Rescue Mission. So the populations that those kinds of places get are already compromised from a health standpoint. And so I've invited Dr. Garcia to come and address not only the shelter operators, but volunteers who work in those shelters as to what kinds of protocols they should follow in the event somebody shows up with whatever kind of an infection, whether it's just your run-of-the-mill flu or corona, if it happens to show up here. And finally, we will have a study session agenda on this coming up in April to talk about it at the council level. So, yeah, multiple different directions on this, led by the county, led by the U of A, the shelter meeting that we're going to have, and anybody's welcome. It's not just if you're a volunteer in a shelter to come on the 11th, and then the study session. So, yeah, it's a front and center issue. I don't think we ought to necessarily overreact locally, but we certainly ought to be prepared for when and if.
Is the NC2A, this decision about whether or not the games would be played, basically just TV-only event, is that a day-to-day decision?
It is, and it goes beyond that. It goes to things such as team travel. We have teams that are planning on international travel to Italy, to places in Europe, those kinds of things. I think in those kinds of decisions, the concern is more, will the student athletes and the teams be able to get back, as opposed to what they'll experience there? Because as you know, there are certain discussions about where we're going to let people come to the country, come to the United States from. So if you travel somewhere, you may not be able to get back in a timely fashion. But yeah, all the postseason chatter is really day to day, depending on how this thing develops over the next couple of weeks. And You know, the women are off to Las Vegas right now, women's basketball. The men will be off to Las Vegas next week. And then it's to scattered sites all over the country. So, you know, it's an evolving issue, and it affects travel. It affects affects an awful lot of considerations at venues that are hosting postseason tournaments. And we might be one of them, depending on how the decision is made with respect to the women's basketball team.
Does that, I don't know when that tournament begins. Is that about the same time as the men?
The
women? Yeah, the women's tournament.
Women's Pac-12, it's a week ahead.
Oh.
The women's Pac-12 starts today with a play-in games, and then our first game is tomorrow with the winner of either ASU or Colorado. And so the women are a week ahead, but yeah, and it'll continue that way throughout the postseason tournament. What? If we host in McHale, if we host here, it would be the weekend of the 20th.
Okay, well, decisions, we'll see how all that works out, but that is day-to-day. I'll tell you, your council colleagues, they're all on board with these e-scooters. I'm not a big fan. I know you're not either. You are the lone dissenting voice in giving this thing, this program, a six-month extension.
Yeah, so they did a survey, they being the city, and yeah, I guess it was just us who did the survey. The scooter companies were not necessarily involved, but they went out and profiled the you know, what riders are, and so here is the profile of a scooter trip. It lasts less than a mile. It lasts about 9 minutes. It begins, the numbers begin to increase significantly around happy hour, and they peak out at about midnight on Fridays and Saturday nights on 4th Avenue. So for all of the conversation from some of my colleagues about these things are going to save the environment and fix climate change, these are not being used to displace car trips. Nobody jumps in their car and drives less than a mile from bar to bar on 4th Avenue at midnight on a Friday. They're being used for bar hopping. The observational piece of the study of the survey found that 2% of the riders were wearing helmets. And so the council was saying, well, you know, they wouldn't ride on the sidewalks if we had protected bike lanes. And so they're saying, let's use some of the revenue we're generating from the scooters to build these protected bike lanes. Well, the revenue so far is about $74,000. And we've spent $16,000 to $18,000 of that to put decals on the sidewalks on 4th Avenue to tell people where to park, which they're ignoring. So, with the remaining $55,000, that's going to build about 100 yards of a protected bike lane. So, the thing is silly. People are going to get hurt. The businesses, we have 140 local-owned businesses on 4th Avenue. 4th Avenue Merchants Association wrote a very strong letter in opposition, as did both West University and the Iron Horse neighbors. They're just tired of it. And the usage data was interesting also. It peaked out at about 50,000 rides back in, I think it was March, and it's down to about 20,000 now, and about 40% of those are on sidewalks. So it's a mistake. It's an accident, multiple accidents waiting to happen, and the council just feels like this is, our response to this is analogous to our response to climate change, and I think it's just a stupid analogy because people are not using these to displace car trips. They're simply not.
And the payday is not there at the end of the day.
No, and we're not out citing, and that's another issue that I've got, is that 100% of the enforcement obligation for this, for showing where they're improperly parked or you know, dumped is a better word, it falls on the businesses and the residents. We're not, and we should not, be sending TPD out to chase scooters around 4th Avenue. And so people are not being cited, and so that $74,000 that we've taken in is the registration, the licensing fees that the companies are paying. If we were to increase that, then they'd jump ship, and so maybe that's going to be a saving grace at some point when the council decides that we want to have these companies actually pay for some protected bike lanes, and they say, well, you know, that's not in our business model. We'll go somewhere else.
How about Mona's Danish Bakery right now, Councilman?
Sounds good.
All right. Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Mona's located at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. We've sent a lot of Buckmaster listeners up there, people trying Mona's for the first time, including one of our face-off guys. John Munger said he'd never been up there. Now he's been up there twice in a week. And he thought, well, I'm just going to order a piece of Kringle. Bill's been talking about, well, you know, I have a Kringle. Well, they gave him a whole Kringle. It'd easily accommodate eight people. And so he had plenty to bring home. But I'll tell you, if you've not gone by Mona's, check it out. They're open right now for lunch and, of course, breakfast, 6:30 in the morning, Mona's Danish Bakery. And their website, monasdanishbakery.com, is also a link at buckmastershow.com. When we come back with Councilman Kasachek, I've got a whole stack of stuff. Is the councilman taking a position on this whole Confederate flag issue? Are you, Councilman?
Well, I'm not even sure we have a voice in the conversation, frankly, but I do have a position on whether or not we should be subsidizing the event.
All right, that will be what we will talk about when we take the break and come right back. Be right back.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster encouraging you to fly from Tucson International Airport. When you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. A new study shows the Tucson Airport Authority's annual economic impact is $7.4 billion, with almost $1 billion of that from visitors flying into the airport. Fly Tucson, and airlines will respond with more flights, bringing more visitors, benefiting all of us. Type in TUS when you book your next flight and fly Tucson.
Biosphere 2's new ocean tour takes you behind the scenes of the largest experimental ocean in the world, researching solutions for the global coral reef crisis. Other exciting tours include the amazing 30-year history, a family tour for families with kids 10 and under, and the inspiring Under the Glass tour, one of the 50 must-see wonders of the world. Visit UA Biosphere 2 today. Explore the future. Online giving for coral reef research and information about tours and more at biosphere2.org.
The Regional Transportation Authority and its member jurisdictions have completed more than 850 transportation projects or service improvements across the region to date. The RTA is a state-established political subdivision and taxing district. The RTA's current half-cent sales tax funds the 20-year plan through June 2026. And the RTA is laying the foundation to develop a new plan. To learn more, please visit www.rtanext.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. That's appropriate bump music. Everybody's talking for a talk show. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio on the Buckmaster Show. If you've not been by Green Things, they've had that expansion. Zocalo Village is part of the 13-acre property with amazing plants, trees, annuals, a lot more. I can't believe it. 50-year anniversary of Green Things, 50 years and still growing at 3384 East River Road. So check it out, Zocalo Village over there with all that great, well, they've got beautiful antiques, fine art, handmade furniture, lighting, Talavera pottery, greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. Let's go back now on the live line. Tucson City Councilman, Democrat Ward 6, Steve Kasachek is with us for his monthly visit.
That place has been there for 50 years.
Yeah, I can't believe it. It's just amazing what Jan and Jack, the owners, have done with that property. They've expanded. Zocalo used to be over at Country Club and Broadway, had a great reputation in town. They now have been absorbed by the Green Things family or part of the property, and it's really, really nice. I don't know if you get out that way. You usually don't run in that area.
No, I do. I'm on the loop all the time. In fact, I had an interesting experience yesterday. I was running, it was about 5:30 in the morning, heading down a residential street in that direction. There were six javelinas systematically tipping over people's trash cans that they were out by the side of the curb. But yeah, no, I get out there every day and I see, almost every day, and I see them quite frequently. I didn't realize they had a 50-year lifespan.
50-year history, and I know you've seen a lot of cars there. It's a very popular place in town. Yeah. Steve Kasachek, there have been attempts in the past. I know I've talked about it many times over the years about the Confederate flag flying here at different events. And what comes to mind for years, and I think it's still a part of the birthday celebration, August 20th. The Confederate flag is one of the flags that are shown now at the rodeo parade. Is this a big deal, or what's your take on it, Steve?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, Lane Santa Cruz, new council member, threw a flag and said she wanted it taken down. I believe that the flag flew over this area territory for about 300 days, so it's not as though that it's got an extensive history here. I obviously don't support the symbolism that it represents. It's totally unfortunate that it has a place in the parade, and yet if it's a part of the history, perhaps what they ought to do is dip it in tilt it forward, and so it's lower than the rest of the flags while they're walking down the street. I also support Rahina's idea of adding the Pasquayakian Tone Odom flags to the parade. As a sign of respect for the nations that have been a part of this territory for forever, but my big concern about the whole conversation right now is that the city, somebody from the city came out in the last week and said, well, we don't financially support the rodeo parade. Or the rodeo, we just give in-kind services. Well, those in-kind services aren't for nothing, and we have the All Souls procession and Tucson Meet Yourself and El Tour, and we have civic events all over the city all year long that are not getting the kind of in-kind support that the city is giving to this event. And so if we're going to play by the same set of rules, then let's make the rodeo parade pay for the kind of in-kind services that everybody else is paying for, or let's start donating to some of these other events as well. I don't think that we can even dictate, though, to the rodeo committee what they do with respect to the flags, because as I said before the break, I'm not even sure we have a voice in that, because it's not a city event. It's a private foundation, as I understand it. So I think that they ought to be a little more sensitive to the symbolism that they're reflecting there. If there's a way to do that and still honor the history of the area, then cool. But I will say this just finally, I'm not a big rodeo supporter anyway. I think that the the whole activity is anachronistic. I don't think that in terms of the animal, the way the animals are treated, I think that the thing ought to go the way of some of the other competitions, in quotes, that involved animals, where there's cockfighting or pit bull fighting or the kinds of, we saw Greyhound Racetrack go under. And I'm not a big supporter of rodeo generally. So that if asked whether I support the continuation of the event, the flag is not my number one issue. My number one issue is just generally how the animals are treated.
How is the project going over at the site of Tucson's iconic Benedictine Monastery? Have they begun work on that?
Yep. We had a pre-construction meeting a couple nights ago at the ward office. I invited the contractors. Sunt Construction is the general contractor. They showed up along with Ross Rolney and Corky Poster, the design team and the owner. And we had a pretty full house. People are interested in about what's going to happen with the site. They've got their construction fencing up. They have removed the solar panels. They will be reused on site. One of my staff people was out at Mission Gardens yesterday, and we were sharing emails throughout the course of the day about how we can possibly transplant some of the trees from the site out to Mission Gardens. I know Ross is planning on transplanting on-site as many as he can, and so if you drive by on Country Club in the next several months, you may see what looks to be a little bit of a nursery out in front of the Benedictine. That's not for permanent. That's temporary storage till they can get replaced after the construction happens. And there'll be about 275 to 80 high-end residential units on the site. Thankfully, the Benedictine will be preserved in perpetuity. It'll have a historic landmark designation attached to it, and the height and the massing of the surrounding residential components is going to be less than the height of the Benedictine, so you're not going to obliterate the view of it. It started out as a really contentious project, as you know. You followed it throughout the course of it. But really, I think we're in as good a place as we can be, given the fact that the sisters sold it and it turned into private property. We've preserved the Benedictine. It's not going to be student housing dorms, and it's going to be probably an attractive amenity to the area. They're putting a lot of money into the construction. It's going to be concrete. It's not going to be, stick and timber. And so Ross understands full well and the sensitivity of the asset. That's the reason he hired Corky Poster, and they're going to respect the integrity and the history of the Benedictine.
Are these for sale, or are these just monthly rentals, Steve Kosacek?
It'll be a rental facility. They're not for sale at this point. And also, I forgot to mention, they have not yet quite figured out what the use of the monastery itself is going to be. There will be some residential also for rent inside the monastery, but in terms of the sanctuary itself and some of the activity spaces, where the columns and the pillars, and if people have been in there, they know that that has got some real potential to be a really cool venue of some sort. And so they're talking about possibly restaurants, some sort of an activity center, lots of different possible outcomes to that. But that hasn't been decided yet. But, yes, there'll be rentals.
I used to go by there and just sit there and kind of meditate.
That's what the sisters did. They had it was a very quiet, meditative series of services that they held inside. And it's sad that they had to move on to Missouri. But when we held an event, I think it was last July 4th, to commemorate the work that was being. It was last July 4th to commemorate the work that we were doing in there on behalf of the migrants. And one of the sisters who ran the place flew back from Missouri to participate and to really say that what we were doing back there on behalf of the guests that we were housing was really consistent with the history and the ethos of the place. In fact, it was a sanctuary chapel back in the 80s, and so they were kind of ahead of their time back then.
All right, I only got about a minute or so, but I think Tucson's going to be okay in this coronavirus deal. I think people, perhaps they may not be doing international travel, but we could benefit here in Tucson with closer to home vacations. And so far, the first 2 months of the year, from what my friend Dan Gibson at Visit Tucson tells me, is we're off to a good tourism year.
Yeah, I met a couple of weeks ago with Brent Durad, who runs Visit Tucson, and got the very same report. Is that, you know, we're doing well regionally, we're doing well locally, and frankly, I was on the phone this morning with Scott Stidler, who's talking about building yet another hotel downtown, a Moxie under the Marriott umbrella. Met with HSL last week about the renovation of the Hotel Arizona. Met with Rio Nuevo. They're doing a hotel on the east side of the stadium. So we've got a lot of positive momentum going. And all of that with the $65 million bucks that Rio's putting into the TCC is going to really make this a hopping place for the years to come.
All right, Steve Kasacek, thank you very much. We'll look forward to your next visit with us in about a month, the first Wednesday of the month. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it. Take care.
Steve Kasacek with us on The Buckmaster Show. Coming up next, our Water Quarterly, presented by the Central Arizona Project. That's next on The Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. We're on 1030 The Voice, trusted news talk. Be right back.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
This is Moa Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Mo has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Mo for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Once a quarter here on the program, we focus on what I believe to be Arizona's most important resource, and I think a lot of people would agree with me, water. Gotta have it. Arizona Water Quarterly, presented by Central Arizona Project. Your water, your future. Joining us on the program, Karen Caesar is here. Karen is a member of the Central Arizona Water Conservation District Board. Karen, how are you?
I'm doing great, Bill. How are you doing?
Doing real well, and we've got lots to talk about today. And we're going to begin talking about something called... I didn't really realize this until you shared this with me, that the CAP is the largest power user in the state of Arizona.
Exactly. Not many people know that.
And the power costs account for about one-third of the CAP's rate. So I guess it goes without saying, power is a very big deal to CAP.
Absolutely. We talk so much about water as our primary resource, but you have to consider how we get that water to our customers and why power is a big deal. We're moving 456 billion gallons of water across our system, which is a 336-mile-long canal. In addition to moving it that distance, we're also lifting it 2,900 feet uphill. And we all know water's heavy. If you fill your water jugs, get those 5-gallon ones. Those are hard to lift. So that takes a lot of power. In fact, about 2.5 million megawatt hours each year to move the water through our system.
I did not realize, Karen, the system is 336 miles long.
It goes from the Colorado River to just south of Tucson at Pima Mine Road.
Yeah, and then, of course, as you say, nearly 3,000 feet has to be pumped uphill along the way. So what does that mean, Karen, to our water rates?
Well, as we said, a big component of our water rates is power. CAP water right now is about $152 an acre foot. And I remind everybody, an acre foot is the amount of water it would take to cover 1 acre 1 foot deep. So you can kind of visualize that. And our power component of that takes up about $56 an acre foot to move that water. So roughly a third of our rates are wrapped up in paying for the power we need to move the water. Another way to think of it is about two-thirds of our rates are basically fixed costs. We call it fixed operations and maintenance costs. The cost to run the pumps, maintain the canal, all those things are a fixed cost. We pretty much know that every year. But one-third is variable because it depends on how much water we pump. And so that's how much power it takes.
And in the past, I guess your single source was that Navajo generating plant station.
Yes, and as we all know, that closed last year, and CAP was ready. In fact, we prepared for transitioning to a post-NGS world for our power. To manage our power needs now, we have developed a power portfolio, which includes a combination of long-term and market purchases for power.
Oh, that power portfolio sounds like we're talking about the financial realm.
Well, and in many ways, Bill, it is, especially when you consider that our annual cost at CAP for energy can range between $60 and $80 million. That's and we all know what our electric bills look like in the summer around here.
$60 to $80 million?
Yes, they pale in comparison to what CAP pays. But just like you would with your finances, you want to diversify your portfolio, which is why we sought to diversify our power portfolio, where we were getting our power, so we weren't heavily vested or reliant on one particular source.
So this is purchased from the open market, the power?
Yes. Yeah, we have our power portfolio now consists of a combination of things, power purchased on the open market day ahead. We have very smart people that work for CAP that are involved in the very real-time power market.
That know the energy sector.
They have to become experts in the energy sector. And then we also have some long-term contracts where we've locked in a rate over a longer period. So we're balancing taking advantage of maybe opportunities and low power cost in the short term with some certainty over the long term. So we don't have great fluctuations in our power costs, which then would, we have to be transmitted to our rates. So we have a 50-year contract for power with Hoover Dam, which still generates a lot of hydroelectric power. And something very exciting that we just started doing, which is a 20-year power purchase from a solar energy farm and also a 5-year agreement with SRP, or the Salt River Project in Phoenix.
So, Karen, you're saying the portfolio now includes solar?
Yes, it does. And one of the things the board directed the organization to do was include more renewables in our new power portfolio. And to that end, we are very excited that we have included solar energy in our power portfolio. And, as we know here in Arizona, we have more peak sun hours than any place in the nation. And now we're looking to harness some of that power in the form of agreeing to purchase 20 years of power from a new Origis Energy's Solar One generation facility in Salome, Arizona.
And Salome, where is that?
Exactly. Salome, look it up on the map. Salome is a little town in kind of a central western Arizona, north of Interstate 10, about halfway between Phoenix and our state line, Colorado River, with California. So it's a very low density, low developed area that obviously gets lots and lots of sun.
But they got a lot of solar panels probably over there.
Yes, this new facility has more than 90,000 solar panels, which is enough creates enough energy to power around 10,000 homes.
Is this a new solar farm?
Yeah, actually, it is. It's brand new.
Because I'd never heard of this.
Well, yeah. And your listeners will, I'm sure, be familiar with many of the solar generating facilities around the state. If you drive to San Diego, you see them around here. But this is a brand new one that was built specifically for CAP's needs. And as a fact, as a board member, I had the honor to be present at the ribbon cutting ceremony that took place there at the end of January. Members of the board toured the 210-acre facility that is going to provide us, CAP, with 30 megawatts an hour of solar energy.
So it's a pretty good footprint, 200 plus acres.
It is a very big footprint. It takes in order to create solar energy, you need lots of space for your solar panels. So yeah, it's a big facility, and it's really fascinating, state of the art, all American made solar panels, by the way. Mm-hmm. And it was just fascinating to see how a facility works, where the panels tip and rotate to track the sun throughout the day to maximize the generation of energy.
Yeah, because the sun's going to be a reliable source, hopefully, for a long time.
Hopefully for a long time, exactly.
Karen, while we have you here, Karen Caesar, how about that big issue we've talked about in the past, the so-called drought contingency plan for Arizona? Can you give us an update on that?
Oh, sure. I'd love to. We've talked, and I've talked many times on this show, about the drought contingency plan, or the DCP, that was enacted last year. And that's really been helping us go forward. Even with good hydrology, the DCP has been keeping us in the tier zero shortage. But the word contingency is important in there, because the drought contingency plan was really a means to bridge the gap, so to speak, between the current guidelines that we're working under that were developed in 2007, I say cleverly called the 07 guidelines, and what comes next, because the 07 guidelines expire in 2026, and something's got to be there to take their place. And here we are, even though that's 6 years away, in the world of water policy and planning, that's not a long time. So
planning's already getting going, I guess.
Absolutely. Planning's already underway in Arizona, starting in Arizona, to develop our state's perspective to the new operating rules that will help us in negotiations with our fellow basin states, the other Colorado River basin states, because these 2026 guidelines will apply to all the seven basin states.
We'll hear more about that, I'm sure.
Oh, yes. A committee is coming together with many of the same people that worked on the drought contingency plan, and this committee is going to be called the Arizona Reconsultation Committee, and that's going to be kicking off in May.
Any other news you'd like to share with us quickly?
Oh, yeah. Do one more thing, and this is really interesting, and again, I think it's so important that people understand their water and know where to go for more information. And one of the things that the CAP has done is launched a new site called Know Your Water News. And so this is a compilation of news information about water, and anybody can go to knowyourwaternews.com, and that's all spelled out, one long word, to find out more about a number of issues related to water supply. And your listeners can go there and they can sign up, get weekly newsletters, and also follow us on social media via Twitter and Facebook and stay informed, because there's a lot of water issues that are still coming up.
And, of course, cap-az.com is your main website.
Absolutely. And that's such a great website. Information on board meetings. I'd like to remind all your listeners that all of our board meetings are live streamed. In fact, we'll be meeting starting at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. And so you can always pop in from anywhere in the world on your computer and watch the board in action.
Do you meet once a month?
We meet once a month, first Thursdays of every month. And the board meetings start at 10. I chair the Public Policy Committee, and we start at 9, and we're very active right now because it's the legislative season. Mm-hmm. So we're always talking about any legislation that might impact CAP. Like I said, those not only are they live streamed, but they are available to watch at a later date, should you be so inclined.
All right, Karen Caesar, always a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Bill.
All right, it's the Buckmaster Show. Continuing, Dr. David Levy is next, the renowned comet discoverer. He's the Buckmaster Show science contributor. He's next.
Biosphere 2's new ocean tour takes you behind the scenes of the largest experimental ocean in the world, researching solutions for the global coral reef crisis. Other exciting tours include the amazing 30-year history, a family tour for families with kids 10 and under, and the inspiring Under the Glass tour, one of the 50 must-see wonders of the world. Visit UA Biosphere 2 today. Explore the future. Online giving for coral reef research and information about tours and more at biosphere2.org. The current Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. In preparation for developing a new 20-year plan, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to identify priority projects based on public input. RTA member jurisdictions will submit their respective project lists by June 2020 for the CAC to consider for a future plan. To learn more, visit www.rtanext.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
And this is Matt Russell from the Buckmaster Show.
Matt, did you hear that Travel and Leisure magazine just ranked the Douro Valley as a top 50 spot for world travel?
Yes, so how about Portugal and Spain for my next culinary and cocktail cruise?
Let's do it on the Douro River aboard the new Ama Douro ship from Ama Waterways.
I'll need a chef's table dinner, winery tours, and other private excursions.
Matt, consider it done.
Thanks, Ryan. Portugal and Spain, here we come. Go to bvtravel.com to learn more.
Buckmaster Show listeners know about my love of travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. I know you value your time and money, so it makes sense to fly Tucson with nearly 60 daily nonstop flights to major hub airports. If you're flying to another airport to take a nonstop flight, you're still making a connection and spending 4 hours on the road traveling to that other airport. That's why I fly Tucson and encourage you to do the same.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen.
Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Time for Dr. David Levy, who is the Buckmaster Show contributor on science, the former science editor of Parade Magazine. He heads up, and he's the founder of, along with his lovely wife, Wendy, the Sharing the Sky Science Education Organization. Dr. Levy, one of the most successful discoverers of comets in history. He's got 23 comets, including his co-discovery of the Shoemaker-Levy 9. That's the comet that collided with Jupiter back in 1994, producing the most spectacular explosions ever witnessed in the solar system. David, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine, thank you. It's good to hear your voice. Wendy and I are all here, excited, and there is a comet in the sky right now in the constellation of Cassiopeia, but you need a telescope to see it. Have you been looking at Orion lately, Bill?
Oh, I love Orion. It's just so spectacular.
But not quite as spectacular as usual.
Why is that, David?
So there's a star that's kind of missing.
What is it? Betelgeuse?
It's Betelgeuse, which is usually the brightest star, Alpha Orionis. But this year,
what? It's
one of the fainter stars. And I can tell you why.
I'd like to hear it. What happened to Betelgeuse?
Well, it is nothing that's unusual. Betelgeuse is a variable star. The American Association of Variable Star Observers lists it that way. It varies between 0.3, which is the brightest star in Orion, and 1.2, which is one of the fainter stars. This winter, it has been much fainter than 1.2. In fact, about 3 weeks ago, I recorded it as being magnitude 2.0, which is quite faint. Since then, it has brightened up a little bit since then. Telescopic observations have shown that Betelgeuse has released a little bit of dark matter, which is covering the surface of the star, which causes it to fade a lot more than usual. Does that mean it will become a supernova soon and become the brightest star in the sky by far, almost as bright as the half moon and easily visible in daylight? The answer is probably not.
Dr. Levy, this is Tom. Can I ask you a question? You referred to dark matter being released by Betelgeuse. Do you mean actual dark matter that were this mysterious stuff in the universe, or some material that just has a dark color?
No, unfortunately, I mean like a soot-like material, like you'd find out of a chimney.
No.
This is visible dark matter. I do not subscribe to the theory that dark matter can explain everything from why you can't sleep at night to the structure of the universe. I don't subscribe to it. I don't buy it. But Betelgeuse does release occasionally some dark material that causes the star to fade, and this winter it released an awful lot, and the star has faded much more than usual.
Are you using the new camera now on your telescope?
Yes, I haven't used it to photograph. I haven't taken any pictures of it. I've been using it visually. The only star I photograph, and I use that telescope with the new camera to photograph, is Clyde star, which is a star that Clyde Tombaugh discovered during his search for distant planets, and it's my favorite variable star, so I observe that a lot as well.
You know, you're talking about dark matter. I should have just picked up on that and said, what about these dark skies we keep hearing about?
Yeah.
How important is that? There's your segue.
Well, yeah, dark sky really shouldn't be happening. Every square inch of the sky should be as bright as the sun, and it's not. Instead, the sky is very, very dark. And the reason for that, and it's called Olber's paradox, is that all of the stars, the light from all of the most distant objects in the universe hasn't reached us yet. It's because of the age of the universe.
Oh.
The universe isn't old enough, so that all of the light from all the parts of it has not reached us yet. And that's why the night sky can be as beautiful and as dark as we can sometimes get from here in southern Arizona.
Were you over at that astronomy complex near you?
Yeah, I was there just a couple of weeks ago, the Chiricahua Astronomy Complex, and that truly is one of the darkest areas that I've ever seen the sky from.
Mm.
Until I come back home the same night and I look up and see my own sky from my own backyard and I think, this isn't too bad right here.
Here is the David Levy quote of the month. Go ahead, Dr. Levy.
Okay, this time we're going to have a little game. I'm going to quote it and then I'd like to ask you to tell me who said it.
Okay.
Our fondness for the stars has touched our souls. We all share the feeling of discovery, whether the object we have found is new to all or new only to us. The thrill penetrates our being as we try to describe, through drawings, photographs, or words, how we have been changed by a universe sharing a secret with us.
You said that.
Yes, you got it. It's in one of my books.
There you go. There you go. It's in one of the books. You came out to Tucson in Arizona for the weather. Wasn't that because of the observing?
Yes, it was. That's why I relocated here about 40 years ago in 1979. And I'm still here because we get clear, except for this winter, we get a clear sky more often than almost anywhere else in the world.
But this has been one of the worst as far as the winter season.
Yeah, it's been, we've had a lot of rain, but we've had a lot of cloudy nights, and that has been why this season has not been typical. And I'm hoping that we'll get some more clear nights eventually. In fact, I hope we get a clear night tonight, in fact, so I can look at Betelgeuse and see the other things. But we do have a bright moon in the sky.
All right, David Levy, I think we've already got you scheduled for your next visit to the program, which I look forward to very much. Thank you, and
me
my
too.
Love to Wendy, your lovely wife.
Thank you, and Wendy says hi.
Thank you very much, David Levy. Always a pleasure. Thanks, David.
Okay, bye.
All right, this portion of the Buckmaster Show is presented by our good friends over in Silver City. You know, David was talking. Tom, jump in here. Tom Fairbanks, jump in. David was talking about dark skies, and I remember one night we were over in Silver City, and we were out just outside of town. That sky was so dark. This whole area is just so rich for observing the night sky. So if you're into that, that's another reason to take the three-hour drive to visit Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. There's so much to do over there, including visiting the world-famous Gila Cliff Dwellings National Monument, one of America's first national monuments. I think it goes all the way back to Teddy Roosevelt declaring that a national monument. It really is a treasure just north of Silver City. Good starting place? Why not check out their website, southwestnewmexico.org. There you will find ideas about what to do in the area and all sorts of suggestions about where to stay. Silver City, southwestnewmexico.org. Okay, Tom Fairbanks, did David answer your question?
About Betelgeuse.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Betelgeuse has been doing some funny things, and but he was more on top of it, I think, than some of the other people that I've been reading or seeing online talking about it. Some people were really scratching their heads.
Mm-hmm.
But Dr. Levy knew that it was some material that had apparently been ejected by the star itself,
Wow.
which was obscuring its luminescence.
There you go. All right, that's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of Tom Fairbanks, I'm Bill Buckmaster. We have the very popular Dave Ramsey Show. That's been doing so well for us. Follows the Buckmaster Show, all that great money advice, and he makes it fun. The way he doesn't try to put anybody down. It's all in a fun manner, the way Dave Ramsey's show works. Have a great afternoon.